And we're joined now by Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief for The Advocate, who was a participant in the one and only debate between Eddie Lee Risponi and John Bel Edwards. And Mark Ballard, as we discussed with Jim Brown a few moments ago, some would say much more heat than light. What happened?
Well, I think the debate, the people organizing the debate decided that the best way to go about getting either of these candidates to be specific about where they wanted to be, you know, what they wanted to do for the state, was to let them go at it themselves. We all had follow-up questions, but they went at it so heatedly that we never got a chance to ask our follow-up questions, but oftentimes it was brought out by the opponent, you know, asking the follow-up questions that we would have brought up. And I guess it was good TV, and I'm not sure what you may have learned from it. So,
well, it's the only debate, though, and the governor took exception to the fact that his opponent has been largely unavailable for shows like this. He's not making personal appearances largely. He's not going to public forums where he would speak singularly. It's an unusual campaign, and if the polls are accurate, Eddie Lee Risponi may be rewriting the books on how to campaign. What do you think about where we are right now?
Well, I've been asked that question a lot, and I think it has to do with the math. And the math is that despite his unpopularity around the country, the president is still very popular in Louisiana, and that is why Mr. Risponi just says Trump, Trump, Trump. And what he's basically doing is playing a kind of a defense of trying not to say anything that'll anger anybody, and trying to, you know, basically block shots on goal and say Trump, 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 and conservative, conservative, conservative. And the Republican Party's acolytes are in there kind of providing an echo chamber for that. And so, I mean, I think that's what it is. The math is that we're in a deep red Republican state that elects statewide, anyway, Republicans. And he's looking at, as long as he doesn't mess up any, then he's going to win by saying Trump and conservative a lot.
A listener asked a few days ago, the last time Louisiana had a governor with no political office experience before, and I don't know of any, but Bobby Jindal almost won an election in 2003 against Kathleen Blanco, and he had never won an election to that point, and he was only 32 years old. But people knew him.
But he had government experience.
You're right. He had been secretary of the largest agency in the state. He also had been head of the University of Louisiana system, so he grew up in the government. Eddie Risponi, different story. Another listener noted that he doesn't have a Wikipedia page. I don't know if that's a prerequisite, but the guy we just had on the show, Jim Brown, he's got one that's about 10 pages long. He is kind of a blank page, isn't he?
He is for a lot of folks. I mean, for you and I in the bubble, we've known of Eddie Risponi for years because he is very involved, or was very involved, in Republican Party politics. He gave lots, almost $1 million, to candidates and causes over the last years. He worked, you know, as civilians in these kind of boards. One was for workforce development, and another one was for education. So he's been involved, but he just hasn't been involved on the front lines the way we expect our elected officials to be.
He said at the press club debate when in the primary, that also included Ralph Abraham, that he registered first as a Democrat, and when he was 18, well, when he was 18, 18-year-olds couldn't vote, so it wasn't when he was 18. Probably when he was 21, which would have been around 1970. I don't know when he had the epiphany to become a Republican, but he's certainly not alone there. Most of the Republican office holders in our state were Democrats at one time. And there are very few things, because of the lack of a record, that John Bel Edwards can really attack him on. The fact that he does not have a voting record, does this make him a particularly elusive target?
It is elusive, and I think that also goes back to the fact that he's not appearing anywhere, so we don't quite know where he stands and therefore can't really ask pertinent and delving questions about, why he holds positions that he does. That he was a Democrat back in the day is not shocking because, I mean, at the time, the Democrats ruled Louisiana the way the Republicans do now. And so I imagine that epiphany came about during the shift from Democrat to Republican. And I kind of see that, maybe 10 years or 15 years or 20 years from now, there'll be people who say, well, I was a Republican back when I was young, but now I'm a Democrat, or whatever party is in ascendancy at the time.
Well, Eddie Rasponi has called Edwin Edwards, excuse me, John Bell Edwards. It would apply to Edwin Edwards, but he's called John Bell Edwards a career politician. John Bell Edwards did not run for political office until he was 41 years old. Now, Eddie Rasponi, as we know, backed Bobby Jindal, who was a career politician, who got his first big job as Secretary of the Department of Health when he was like 24 years old. Is there any big deal about being a, quote, career politician, Mark?
Well, I think we're seeing a whole lot of exaggeration in amongst the rhetoric that's being thrown out, particularly by the Republicans, but really by both sides as well. Governor Edwards was a small-town lawyer, but he was from a politically prominent family in Tangipahoa Parish, and he didn't run for office, like you say, until he was 41 years old, and then went for the big one as a backbencher in the Louisiana House.
We're going to spend some more time with Mark Ballard after this brief timeout on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. We're wrapping it up with Mark Ballard, Capitol Bureau Chief for The Advocate. He was on the panel for the only debate between John Bell Edwards and Eddie Lee Rasponi last night. LPB hosted the debate along with Cable, and the two candidates expressed some dislike for each other. It's getting a bit personal, and the election is 2 weeks from Saturday, and for those who missed it, here's a sampling of the two candidates going toe-to-toe on a major issue that certainly is pertinent as we move forward.
We've wasted $85 million on people who did not qualify. We've also spent $16 million on illegal immigrants with welfare benefits. Again, we're wasting dollars and cents.
And John Bell Edwards, I think he's talking about Medicaid expansion. Here is Governor Edwards.
You don't have a plan, and you don't have a plan because you don't care. If you cared about Louisianans and their health care coverage, you would never propose a Medicaid freeze, which you know to be an actual repeal.
All right. Now let's pull up Mark Ballard. Mark was there, and these two gentlemen were only a few feet apart. Did they shake hands when it was all over?
Yeah, and actually, they when it was all over, they, were very friendly to one another and made plans to have dinner together when it's all over.
Well,
it's politics.
It is politics, and you and I are old enough to remember in Louisiana when the prescription to be governor was to be a Protestant from North Louisiana. Now it's to be a Catholic from South Louisiana. They're both Catholics. They're both from South Louisiana, and they're both LSU graduates, and that is another thing that doesn't hurt running in Louisiana. But there is a distinction. Voters do have a choice, and turnout, they're both trying to get their voters out because it's a close race. How do you think turnout will be? Will 40% show, 50%? What do you think, Mark?
Well, I mean, I'm thinking that it, at least from the folks that I'm talking to, that it'll be in the 40s, and which will be a pretty good turnout for Louisiana because recently, we just haven't gone out to vote that much. We'll have a better idea of this on Sunday morning after the first day of early voting. They can kind of get about 20%, 25% of the votes will come in during early voting, and the biggest day of that will be on Saturday. There's no LSU game on. Southern is having its homecoming, but there's a week where we'll kind of find out, how engaged people are in it. But it really is going to boil down to who gets their guys out to the polls.
Well, Mark Ballard, thank you as always. We'll call next week.
Thank you, Jim.
Take care. See you soon. We're joined now by Marta McDowell, who is an accomplished writer and, of course, is a gardener. She lives, gardens, and writes in New Jersey, consults for public gardens and private clients, writes and lectures on topics related to gardening, and teaches landscape history and horticulture at the New York Botanical Garden. Her book is Emily Dickinson's Gardening Life, and good morning to you, Marta.
Good morning, Jim.
Well, Emily Dickinson is somebody great literary lore, as we know, but she did die in 1886. Why did you decide to go down this road and find out about her love for your passion in life?
Well, she's a poet that most of us know about, and yet for me it was someone who I didn't really understand that well, and I happened to go to her home in Massachusetts by accident one day, and I found out that she was a gardener, and I was a gardener, and that just made a little link.
Well, she also, as you note, had many other interests, and when she dove into something, it was full bore.
That's right, and, you know, I think many of us have this image of Emily Dickinson in a white dress, sort of staring out her bedroom window. And yet she was very connected to the world. So she was a baker and a gardener, and she played the piano, and she wrote lots and lots of letters to people. So she was very connected. And a friend of mine said, well, you know, I think that if Emily Dickinson were alive today, she would be like a great person for sending texts all the time. Uh-huh. You know, she'd be texting people, because she did. She always sent these little notes, and sometimes pressed flowers or little bouquets or little cakes or things.
Well, she wrote over 1,000 letters that have been published. Imagine the ones she wrote that were not published. And one Dickinson specialist calls her the networked recluse. And the book is Emily Dickinson's Gardening Life from Marta McDowell, our guest. And you started your research with her poems, and it just kind of led from there, didn't it?
Absolutely. So I've been working with Emily Dickinson's poems and letters and material for 30 years now. And her poetry is still very much alive, and it's alive for people, you know, whether they live in New England or whether they live in Louisiana, right? It can say something to all of us. And she loved summer, so I think you Louisiana gardeners would appreciate that, and, you know, that the fact that she kind of called her flowers tropical, or she said one day she was in her little greenhouse in the winter, and she said, I have but to cross the floor to stand in the spice aisles.
You have several of her poems that are included in the book, and it is a beautiful book about Emily Dickinson and gardening. And in the pages, you, according to one reviewer, Tova Martin, says you'll feel the dense heat of summer, noting the gay attire of the scarlet runner beans, learning the skills of an ultra-observant plantswoman, finding the poetry in nature.
Yeah, and I tried to fill it with her poems and also with a lot of color, with color photographs and period botanical art, so that it would really give you a feeling of being out in her garden. I'm lucky enough to be able to work on her garden on some summer days. I go up there as a volunteer, and it really gives you a different feeling about this person who we revere as an American poet, an iconic American poet.
We're blessed with lots of azaleas in this part of the world, and that was something that Emily Dickinson really appreciated.
Absolutely. Her brother's home right next door was called the Evergreens, and he had so many azaleas and rhododendrons, you know, that she would have seen them around her all of the time.
How was it going to these places where you know she walked more than a century ago?
Well, you know, I love history, Jim, so it kind of brings it alive to me, and I can have that little, you know, tingle of this is a place that's important to us, right? Important to our culture. That was a simple, homey place, right? It was sort of like a gentleman's farm, right? There was a barn, there was livestock. You know, she talks in her poems about everything from haying to corn to lots and lots of flowers. So it was maybe not exactly what it's like today, but it certainly gives you the feeling.
And you've been involved with the Emily Dickinson Museum.
Yes, I have. So I've been lucky enough to do programs there, and I wrote their audio tour if you want to take your own walk around the landscape. And I actually do garden there some. Last year I was their so-called gardener in residence.
Well, the book from Marta McDowell is Emily Dickinson's Gardening Life, The Places, The Plants and Places That Inspired the Iconic Poet. Thank you so much, and congratulations on your exceptional work.
Thank you, Jim. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween, Marta McDowell. Speaking of Halloween, today is the 68th birthday of one Nick Saban, who will be on the field in 9 days. 9 days, how about that? Week from Saturday, LSU number one, Alabama number two in Tuscaloosa, Bryant-Denny Stadium. And it's also the birthday today of Dale Duard Brown, the most successful basketball coach in the history of Louisiana State University. Dale Brown, the man from Minot, North Dakota, 84 years old. Dan Rather, the celebrated anchor, controversial at times, but nobody has stood the test of time better than Dan Rather, who still opines quite fluently. At 88 years old, born on this date in 1931 in Wharton, Texas, the man from Sam Houston State University. Most of his colleagues, of course, went to Ivy League schools. He did not, but he got the anchor chair from Walter Cronkite. It all began in 1981, March 6, 1981, and he lasted until 2005, an amazing 24-year run as the anchor of CBS News. And in Washington, where Dan Rather spent lots of time, I saw him a few years ago at the museum, which is closing, unfortunately. The Washington Nationals are the champions of the baseball world. Wednesday night, they defeated the Houston Astros 6-2 in Game 7 of the World Series. And in this World Series, all seven games were won by the road team, the Nationals becoming the first team to win all four of its series games on the road, and they were the best team in baseball. They had to get to the World Series the hard way, defeating Milwaukee and St. Louis and the Dodgers, all very good teams, and then beating a Houston team that won over 100 games, led by Alex Bregman, the great third baseman who may very well be the American League most valuable player. It'll be between him and the great Mike Trout. So we'll see what happens, but Alex Bregman's a young guy with lots of years to go. The Washington Nationals are the champs for 2019. Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial. Until tomorrow, I'm Jim Inkster. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned.